Hello, friends and enemies, or should I say anemones for this episode. I have a special announcement to make on this feed, and I'm really excited you joined us. What you're listening to right now is an actual play of a new game in development called Descent into Midnight. Descent into Midnight is an aquatic RPG exploring the depths of the sentient mind. In Descent into Midnight, a gifted team of psionic defenders fight mental, physical, and spiritual corruption, threatening their ecosystem, their home, and their friendships. With shared world-building, evocative playbooks and moves, and guided meditation and collaborative storytelling, Descent into Midnight is an aquatic game that is intense, emotional, and shows the wonders of the ocean. Take a listen to this first episode of our playthrough, which features an introduction, setup, and character creation. The next two episodes after this will feature more play and a debrief. You can learn more about this game at descentintomidnight.com, and while you go to check out our site, I'll just jump straight into the show. And we are live. So thank you for joining me for this playtest. We are going to be doing this as just like a promotional playtest to have like an early listen in to what a game of Descent into Midnight sounds like. Ryan, you've played this before. Richard, you are on the development team with me. And Darcy, we have made you aware of this game.
That's all I got.
Many times. There was more to that sentence. Multiple times. So, yeah, I think that you are going to have a kick of this, hopefully, because it's a great aquatic game about cool sea monsters doing cool sea monster things. And it's going to be a good time. So, it is a Powered by the Apocalypse game. For the most part, we're going to stick by the strong tenet of PBTA games. So, if you want to do something, you do it. Everything is going to come from the fiction, so if you want to, you know, have your character do something interesting, tell me what it looks like, tell me, you know, describe it in action, and, you know, we'll go from there. If your narration triggers one of our moves, which we will be using, that's kind of the background of Powered by the Apocalypse, is that we have basic moves, playbook moves, even I get a couple moves as the GM, so anytime that those moves are triggered by the fiction, I will call out for it, and we will follow the mechanics of that move. Usually that move is going to take the fiction, turn it into a mechanic, and then take that mechanic's results and turn it into more fiction. You know, we all might be familiar with the basic concept of Descent into Midnight, but for those listening in who might be thinking, you know, what exactly is this game? Descent into Midnight is a game about a psionically gifted team of underwater creatures who fight mental, physical, and spiritual corruption, threatening their ecosystem, their home, and their friendships. So this game is trying to promote teamwork, spiritual reflection, and environmental awareness. So the snazzy little tagline that our lead project manager, organizer, you know, head honcho person who unfortunately can't be here with us today, Rich Howard, aquatic gaming, you know, my role model in that area, has described it as aquapunk. So that is our snazzy little description of what this game is and what it's going to try to do. So we will get into it a little bit here. So we are all going to be playing guardians of a coral reef or a reef city or, you know, in a thriving community on the edge of an abyssal shelf or any one of these other, you know, various ecosystems in the ocean, which are teeming with life. There is going to be a threat that is introduced. We'll get into that in a little bit here. But for the most part, we are going to be working as a team to, you know, make sure that our home remains our home. It remains the, you know, the vibrant ecosystem and place of life that it is. So we are all going to be playing humanoid-adjacent creatures. So we're all drawing on the basis of aquatic imagery and ecosystems. We're going to be close to merfolk, if that helps you as an analog to sort of like understand the characters. But we're going to focus on the natural world. That said, we do live in a very complex society, so, you know, any sort of technological gadgets or, you know, cool, like, items or techno world, that is all, you know, available to you, with the caveat that it uses bioengineering. So this is, instead of having a set of LED lights plugged into the wall, you may have a series of pods of bioluminescent bacteria that are all in this device or this piece of coral. And, you know, the effect is still going to be the same as a flashlight, but it's all using living creatures. And, you know, it's building on this idea that everything is in this big living world. So we'll get into a little bit more specifics on our reef in our prologue area. But let's talk a little bit about another part of Powered by the Apocalypse games, which are pretty essential. Those are the playbooks. If you haven't played a Powered by the Apocalypse game before, those are like your character classes or your character sheets. They theoretically have all the moves and all the you know, the fiction on there for you, but they're going to be, you know, representative of what your character can do on the page. These are equal parts flavor text and mechanics. And the playbooks for Descent into Midnight focus on a few, you know, central themes. So the Monk Templar is someone, they are, if we all are guardians, they are the guardian. So the Monk Templar takes on the responsibility of fostering the community. They take on the darkness that burdens others and use it to fuel their powers. You are a beacon of hope that burns fast and bright.
I'm going to go see if I can get him to change his practice time. I'll be right back.
Okay. A few moments later.
Yeah, so we will move on a little bit here. So we have the next playbook is The Awakened. So these are literal ocean creatures who have had sentience either purposely or accidentally thrust upon them. So you were just like the rest of your kind. Then you woke up. It's lonely, but you can't let yourself slip back into oblivion. Your kin depend on you to keep them safe. So the Awakened are these sort of these animals with a step beyond the animal moving. They are possibly the most human out of all the playbooks because we are anthropomorphizing them, maybe not physically, but we are emotionally or, you know, conceptually. They are the ones with the, you know, in the air quotes with the capital letters, consciousness. The next playbook that we have available is The Cultivator. Garden, bioengineer, aquaformer, you coax and shape the world around you to serve your needs, sometimes at great personal cost. You nurture the life and the relationships around you. So this is a caring person who literally and figuratively takes, you know, is nurturing and fostering the growth of their environment. Whether that is their physical, ecological environment or their, you know, interpersonal relationship environment. We have the Living Weapon. So you were originally created for one purpose, violence. But over time, you have moved past that to become something greater than just a living weapon. But you remain capable of causing great harm if you can bear the costs. Living weapons may not even be living creatures. They can be constructed from corals or have a body made up of reef sand. They were constructed for violence, but have reclaimed their bodies and themselves to repurpose and become part of this team. That said, they are going to be the ones with the highest potential for violence, but that violence does come at a cost to them. I think Those are the playtestable playbooks that we have. And before we kind of like go through and talk about who wants to play what, let's get an introduction to the people that we have at the table. So we'll go names, pronouns, and then something that might interest you about aquatic gaming. My name is Taylor. I use he, him pronouns, and I have been interested in aquatic gaming. I think that it's where I grew up. I am from Minnesota, where there is a river or a lake within spitting distance. So that sort of like water ecosystem is always something that is, you know, fresh in any sort of day-to-day life for me. And so moving that to the ocean, you know, yes, freshwater, saltwater, it is still that same drive. I love the natural world, and underwater nature is something that intrigues me a lot. Let's go to Darcy.
Hi, I'm Darcy. I'm Darcy Ross. I use she, her pronouns. And I have been spending the last 5 years being a PhD student in biology studying marine snails. And so while I grew up in super suburbia of Illinois, there's not a lot of diversity of life, but like I read a lot of National Geographic and Call of Cthulhu and you know, all sorts of weird games that exposed me to sort of diversity of animal life. And then when I got to grad school, I was able to explore that more and just dove deep into it. And I've just been fascinated by the diversity of animal form for a long time. And the more exposure I get to it, whether through actual experience and getting to touch sea urchins, or whether it's through talking about weird critters in games, like I find that really satisfying to think about the natural world through science and through gaming. And I find them totally valuable in equal parts in very different ways. So I am just over the moon for this game, and I'm really excited to see the kind of deeper themes that it's playing with. So I don't know how much depth I'll bring to it. Probably not much. I'll be like, ooh, sea critter. But but at least the game will be functioning to do something bigger with that. So that's awesome.
Yeah. That was awesome. Let's go on to Richard.
All right, so I'm Richard. I use he, him pronouns. And as for aquatic stuff, my grandmother used to take me alternating years to the zoo, the San Diego Zoo, which is freaking amazing. And then SeaWorld. So we'd get the yearly passes. And so I used to spend tons of time with her down there and, you know, see all the dolphin shows and the critters and the whole thing. But that was sort of like something that had hung out sort of just waiting in the wings in my childhood. And then I met Rich Howard, and you cannot like know that guy and not become immediately interested in all things amazing, crazy aquatic stuff. And when, you know, we decided to move forward with this project, just looking at like documentaries and stuff about all this crazy life that exists just right there. I mean, like I said, I live in San Diego, so it's, you know, 20 miles away. It's amazing. And it's super easy to take for granted. So I'm just thrilled to be able to do something cool with it and learn more about it myself and, you know, share all this rad stuff with other people.
That is, you know, this is why I love working on this game with you. We're the entire team is like all, you know, super really into this aquatic world that we're building. Last but not least, let's get a hold of Ryan.
Hey, I'm Ryan. I use they, them pronouns, and aquapunk is a really cool concept, and I love monster and creature design, and ocean stuff is a really good setting for that. I love learning about the ocean, but I'm actually kind of scared of it, so this is a great way to explore ocean and water and just stuff with that without actually having to be in it.
And you don't have to have any sand.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe through playing this, I can learn more and conquer my fear and actually go in the ocean.
Yeah, there we go. I want to be, you know, respectful of everyone's comfort levels. Is there something in particular that you're just like, this scares me too much, not during play, let's bring this up, or?
No, it's just me physically being in the ocean.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah,
sharks in there, and I don't want to like get in their territory and make them look bad if they want to like check me out. Like, it's not I don't want to make them look bad.
Oh, good.
I have a brief thing, but it's pretty minor, and I suspect it will be fine. But just for sake, like leaning too deep into like gore is something that I'm not super interested in today. Some other day we can do that. Today, not into it.
Yeah,
so we can have gore. We just like see it and move on. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Sounds good.
A natural progression into talking about lines and veils. So, you know, we always want to be aware of what content is or is not going to be something that we want to include in play. So I think that is a really great example of a veil that we can draw on gore. So the actions that may cause it or, you know, whatever we can address as we play. But we will always fade to black in terms of discussing any of that. I usually make a point to talk about how I have a hard line against substance abuse. I don't think that is going to be something that comes up in this game about aquatic life. But just any sort of dependency or addiction issues I would like to not address at play. And we can always change our boundaries or what's acceptable or not during play. So, you know, feel free to speak up and we will adjust as we play. So let's talk a little bit about who is going to be playing which playbook. So remembering back, we can always give descriptions of which is which. We have the Monk Templar, the Awakened, the Living Weapon, the Cultivator.
Can I do the living weapon?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Take it away.
All right.
And we have and the...
I'll give you first choice, Darcy, since theoretically I know these. I hope I know these.
Yeah. I think I'm intrigued by the Monk Templar. I'll take the Monk Templar.
Okay. Yeah. Then I am definitely going to go for the Cultivator.
Ooh.
Because I have ideas.
Okay. Awesome.
Well, I think I do anyway.
This is a great piece of learning data that we are bringing up. We've had 3 playtests. The Cultivator has been in all 3, as has the Living Weapon.
Yeah, I think when we were talking about it, it's the Living Weapon is very easy to get your mind around.
Yes.
And so it's you know, it's one that anybody, you say that and they go, okay, I get it.
Okay. Also, this is a Powered by the Apocalypse game, so we will need 2 6-sided die for everyone. As you sort of look over your playbook, you'll notice that it kind of follows the same model as most other Powered by the Apocalypse playbooks. So there are some flavor text options to choose from. These are your look. There is an option to choose from a variety of different psionics. So as Richard did bring up, this is a game that uses psionic energies. These are, you know, if you're looking for an accessible way to think about them, they are your superpowers. So if you see something like healing spores, that means that you have the psionic ability to, you know, either summon, manipulate, control the spores of the ocean in ways that can heal your friends, etc. All of these powers are, you know, pretty open-ended, and they are left vague for a reason. That's up to you to decide in the fiction what that might mean for your character. There's also homeland and attitude in that flavor section there. If you want to think about your homeland as a way to sort of inform the look of your person, that is something that could be useful. So if you are from a kelp forest, maybe your skin is green and has, you know, sort of flaps that would help camouflage you in that sort of dense forest. Or maybe your body is smooth and brightly colored as a way to differentiate yourself from the surrounding area. And then finally, attitude is just a you know, one word adjective to sort of inform how you might want to play your character. Darcy, it sounded like you had a question.
I do. Are the 3 of us theoretically like the same species, kind of? We are this merfolk humanoids, or are we different kinds of species?
So I think I can answer that one. So we can be whatever. Whatever. Okay. That's the whole thing, is at some point, somewhere way back, maybe you were human and you've sort of like been melded with this other thing, and this is way down the line, you know. I mean, you might just look like a fish.
Cool.
Who knows? Or you could, you know, look like the Aqualad or something, whatever. You know, it's the art will probably mostly lean towards the somewhere in the middle, but not a lot of mammalian features. Mm-hmm.
Ryan is my monster muse, and last time they had a incredibly innovative character design, which was an individual who was made up of a colony of small sea dragons. Yeah.
Aw, awesome. You flatter me.
It was great. We kept talking about that in like our like shared chat. Everyone was like,
yeah,
this is incredible.
Yeah.
Aww.
So
yeah, that's so funny, because I remember you talking about when you talked to me about this playbook a while back. I was like, I was tossing around some sort of like a sea dragon design, and it was actually like a last minute decision to make it like a colony of sea dragons, so I'm glad you liked that.
Ooh, that was a good choice. I'm glad that you wanted that. Yeah, so I would encourage you to, you know, go as humanoid or as non, as you would like. We do have in development a sort of list of examples. So we have, you know, piscinoids for fish, cephalopods, mammalians, reptilian, cartilaginous or crustacean invertebrate.
Well, and I feel like we're doing a disservice if we're making a game where you can be animals and you can't be like an otter, right? Like, that's rule number one, right? Yeah, ever since I read Redwall.
Yes, Redwall's the best.
Sea squirrels, I don't know about, but, you know.
Listen, I'm a I'm one of the developers for this game, and I'm going to go on record saying that sea squirrels are okay in Descent into Midnight.
Okay, all right.
I'm taking that stand. I'm putting my foot down.
So one thing about those two is the different species. One of the ideas we've been tossing around is you would get a sort of signature power for your form. So, like, if you have that cephalopod form, you'd get something like echolocation, or if you're the cartilage, the shark dudes, you get the electric sense or whatever, stuff like that.
Cool. So do we have looks and flavor stuff for our people yet? Have we?
I think I'm ready to go.
Awesome. So we'll go opposite order this time. We'll start with Ryan.
Oh, golly. Okay, cool.
We don't have to.
Oh, no. Okay, the look, I was waffling between armored monstrosity and deceptively delicate. There we go. I think I'm going to go with the latter. Ability, venomous defenses, homeland, a vibrant reef. Attitude is stoic, and I basically want you to picture, like, a sea star thickly carpeted with, like, I was originally going to say, like, deep dark purple, like some sea urchins, but I think it's transparent.
Mm.
Ooh. And so you can see all their internal organs, and they're just covered in these, like,
nice.
Like, you ever see, like, a 3D model with hair glitch out, and the hair just, like, is all standing on end, and it looks really, really weird and ominous. Mm-hmm. I think that's it, except it's all transparent, and they're covered in that, and, like, little signature feet.
Tube feet. Yes.
Yes, tube feet! Yes!
I don't have tube feet.
and then they got the little, like, pincer thingies in between the tube feet and the sea urchin quills to, like, inject the venom, yeah.
Yeah.
So they can give things, like, amazing. A deadly embrace.
Awesome.
That is a really good concept.
And my character's name is Cool S. I think I'm going to use she/her pronouns for Cool S.
Okay. All right. Okay. So we all set?
Yeah, let's go on all to right. Richard.
Okay, so I'm going for an enlightened and encrusted sort of crab-like creature. The psionic's power is vibrant display. Is from a vibrant reef, and attitude is flamboyant. So let's do he/him pronouns, and his name is Clack. He's got this sort of garden that he tends, but essentially he's like the size of a king crab or something, or one of those like Alaskan crabs, a couple of feet across. He's got like pigment changing cells or whatever, so he can do like the octopus thing, and so he's constantly like shifting colors, and with the psionics he's able to essentially extend that past himself, and sort of like swim around like a firework basically, and do all sorts of like crazy displays.
That is really cool. One of the cool things that I love about the cultivator is that you get a personal garden.
Yes.
So have you thought a little bit about what your garden looks like or what it is?
Yeah. So the garden contains volatile herbs.
Okay.
Which you can sort of like shoot out, and you know, he carries like a couple of packets of them with him, sort of like a Batman smoke bomb kind of deal. So it's sort of like an aquatic pepper spray almost. Okay. To actually make that work and not hurt yourself, you either have to be immune to it or like be able to push the water away from you. And so that's part of it, is it sort of like explodes and shoves it. You know, it's a directional thing, so it spreads out some sort of chemical or something in one direction. And so it has all the fun potential to go really poorly if you roll badly.
Yeah.
The other thing is a bioelectric species. So I think he's got little like miniature worker crabs, like,
okay,
that are like his, you know, like him but real tiny, that go, and they actually provide the sort of electricity, and they go around to different like the bases of the different plants, and there's like an adapter where you can like power them up and charge them up as part of their power source. So, you know, they eat stuff and there's a little bit of the photosynthesis, but you can actually like sort of go, oh, this one's not doing well, and go to the base of it and just power it up a little bit.
That is the cutest shit that I've ever heard. That's incredible.
That's very charming.
Oh, that is good.
And I imagine that they can, like, shift colors, too, so you can have, like, a whole little, like, Christmas lights thing going on.
Yes.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
And let's round out the team with Darcy.
Okay, I'm going to be playing... I just got her name. Her name is... Clypeaster... I can't figure out how to make this great Latin name into a name, so let's call her Asteroy. It'll work. So I was also leaning Echinoderm themed, which I'm so I'm very excited that we have both the sea urchin and I'm going to be a sand dollar.
Nice.
I'm going to be, you know, sand dollar themed, and so I'm playing the monk Templar, and so I think what my shtick is going to be is I've got this calcareous asteroid, what is it, Aristotle's lantern, so it's this, like, crazy apparatus that sand dollars and sea urchins have that, like, you know, is sort of where their munchy bits are, and it's just totally insane little structure that you should totally look up, and so I'm thinking she is going to be a ragged and raucous looking sand dollar. So she's been through some stuff. She's from a sandbar desert that may that I'm thinking, depending on the world building, may have actually once been a more lush place and sort of has been uplifted and brought to the surface and everything died, and that's sort of where her home is. Her psionics is that she has control over energy, which I haven't fully figured out yet, but I will in time. And her attitude is morose. So, she's lost a lot, but you know, there's still a little bit of hope that she's clinging to, and she's got this, this really weird structure in the sort of center of her chest that I think is sort of what funnels the psionic powers. So it's nice. Less used as a weapon and more as just a focusing device.
Ooh.
Ooh. Okay.
That's a Asteroy. What did I call her?
Asteroy. I think was a good
name. Asteroy. Yeah. Okay. Really, I just couldn't make that Latin name more cute. Someday I will.
So I love that you have decided on a homeland which was once vibrant and then, you know, now is a little bit more sparse, because we'll get to it in a moment here, but we are going to be fighting corruption or pollution or any sort of, you know, way of taking the ecosystem of the ocean and making it less. So I think that is going to be something that we can draw on when we talk about defining what the corruption looks like in our game. So not only is the corruption something that is, you know, in the environment that we are, you know, living in and we're going to be facing, but all of us carry a potential for corruption within ourselves. So part of the Monk Templar is being able to deal and center yourself and focus more and manage your corruption. So as the Monk Templar, you'll have double the normal corruption track, which from the rest of our playbooks is 5. For you, it's going to be 10. However, you have two things which are called your burnout. Anytime that those things happen around you, you will be marking corruption. So you'll be marking corruption faster than everyone else, but you'll have, you know, double the way of dealing with it. So there are 5 options for your burnout on your playbook, which are under your stats, and we'll get to stats in just a moment here. But I would like for you to choose two of those burnout items and tell me what they are. And for those listening, those options are seeing others suffer, sharing secrets, coming to blows, scaring others, or pushing your limits.
So sorry, these are consequences of when I get overloaded with corruption. This is how I press it, or this is something that causes me.
Yes, it's that one. It's the second one. So anytime that these things happen in the story, you will get a point of experience, and you will also get a point of corruption.
Cool. Let us say scaring others, which, because I'm scary, I hope will happen, because that sounds dramatic and interesting. Yeah. Everyone go Google Aristotle's lantern. They're terrifying. They're beautiful things. And let's say coming to blows. Ooh. I'm really nonviolent, and yet here I am fighting the good fight. So, but it stresses me out, man. It's not good for me.
Oh, geez. Those are terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I am trying to Google that here. Every single time that we have a playtest, someone brings something to the table that no one else has seen or known.
Yay!
And it's just like that sharing of like knowledge and like learning about the ocean has been something that is.
That's going to be such a cool feature of this whole game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's going to keep happening. There's so much in the natural world to keep discovering. That's really cool.
Oh, gross. Yeah.
So it's like a five-bladed, like super crazy, super mm-hmm. teeth, crazy thing. Like,
yeah, and like apparently they can like administer venom through them too. I was like Wikipediaing. I think they're serious business for adorable, wow. charming.
Holy cow! That is super cool.
They're more scary than sea urchins, I think. But they're kind of, yeah.
Oh. Whoa.
Good. Aww. I'm glad to have learned this.
So it's like one of those, you know, stuffed animal claw machine things, only it's a mouth, and it can sting you and eat you and on the underside of some crazy, horrifying creature that's really cool looking. Yeah. Okay.
I'm imagining mine's like locked behind sort of a like an aperture made out of like chitin. Chitin is blades, mm-hmm. right? Sort of, so just, you know, kind of keep it away. But
Good.
How big is Asteroi? Because I think we established that Clack is like a couple feet across.
Yeah.
I think Cool S is around the same size, maybe three feet across. I think that's like 4 feet.
Okay. 4 by 4. Ooh. Maybe she's a bit smaller. Maybe she's let's say 3 feet tall, and she's sort of vaguely humanoid. But I'm imagining her almost like Sugar Glider esque. So she's got these, head to symmetry, right? And so I'm imagining that like each of the spines of, because a sand dollar kind of looks like a stick figure human, right?
Yeah.
So she's sort of playing off of that, but she's got like webbing between, you know, kind of hard webbing, so she can kind of move that, and I assume it will hopefully help her move faster, so she's not stuck behind you guys all the time. But she's probably not that dexterous, so deal with it.
another learning moment, how do sand dollars normally move? How do they normally get around?
Tube feet, right? Are those little
feely, I think so, yeah.
Feely feet. Just hundreds of little foots that pop out underneath the plate, and then just sort of meander forward. So they're real slow.
Good. I love tube feet. That is a good thing.
It's a great word. It's a great bit.
Yeah.
Tube feet are great.
All right. So we have built our characters. The last little step is to choose a move or two, depending on your playbook for other playbook moves. We don't have to go over which ones are chosen unless you are like really psyched about one. And we can highlight that. Otherwise, you know, keep it in your back pocket. They will all have narrative triggers. So like when you appeal to your allies or when you grapple with your enemy, etc. There are also team moves, which are going to inform how you play together as a team. So you'll pick one of those. So for the living weapon, for example, one of the team moves is Guardian. When you use violence to prevent direct harm to an ally, clear a point of corruption. So that is going to inform how you're going to play with the rest of the people on your team. We'll choose those. I did promise that we would talk a little bit about stats. So we are playing a Powered by the Apocalypse game. We have our traditional stat array of, you know, a few little buzzwords for Descent into Midnight. I almost called it a wrong name. you will notice that we have a stat array, and then we have not only positive, but we also have negative tags or adjectives for our stats. So we have hope/despair, altruism/selfishness, community/isolation, calm/anger, and drive/apathy. We do not use hit points in Descent into Midnight. We instead are going to be reflecting the harm that is done unto us by a change in our emotions or our, our values. How we see the world and how we interact with the world. So whenever you may be taking damage or, if something happens to you that is going to, put any sort of harm with a capital H on you, you will be, marking conditions similar to how Masks does. However, this is going to be altering how you are acting in the game. So if you are marking despair, you are going to be disadvantaged to any sort of action that uses hope. That takes a mechanical effect of just giving you a -2 on those. So when you, there are ways of clearing conditions, and we can get to that in play, Most of that is going to mirror masks in terms of comforting others or helping others. You can also clear your conditions by acting out the negative emotions. So if you act through despair, and you know, maybe put yourself at risk, or if you embody the despair in yourself, you know, it's really up to interpretation. If you are embodying that negative emotion, you can clear that if you, you know, if the narrative sort of speaks to you. I would like to get a more cement way to sort of put a mechanic on that. So since this is a playtest, as we are playing, you know, keep that in mind as something that we are looking for specific feedback for.
Awesome.
Yep.
And then underneath all those tags, we have numbers. So when I ask you to roll with calm, you will roll your 2d6 and add that number.
Yeah, we originally had sort of fun, cute names for them, and then we couldn't remember which one maps to which emotion, and then we kind of went, oh, okay, let's cut out the middleman for now, and
just go with the emotion.
Go with that, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, the living weapon, you'll see that, like, they have a really high calm score, and that's because mm-hmm. That's what they do, is they're dealing with that mm-hmm. anger and that negative emotion, so they're really good at, you know, presumably dealing with that, and that's sort of their theme is what you're playing with.
So has everyone picked out the moves that they want?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Good. So we have made our characters. Let's make the world around us. So in play, this would be something that we would focus on for our first session. We will run an accelerated course of this in our prologue to our game of Descent into Midnight. So the first step is to build our reef or our ecosystem. This is building the city. So I would like someone to tell me about a notable landmark or district in our ecosystem. This is the defining feature of where we live.
What about a like a central kelp forest where it's like a nature reserve almost? Okay. Like if this is like the urban area right around Central Park or something where not that I've ever been to New York, I don't know what that's like, but
it's our national forest.
Yeah, it's like this is the, you know, this is like the nature preserve.
Okay.
That's famous throughout this part of the world, and
maybe it has stuff that's died out everywhere else.
Yeah, there you go.
Like it's, you so know, it's really like last, precious.
It's the last bastion of certain species that only live here.
Okay.
I love that.
Can I pitch something to you?
Sure.
Last Bastion as the name of this place.
Nice.
That works.
Very much, yes.
Cool. Now, out of Darcy or Ryan, I would like one of you two to tell me about a species or culture that is different than yours that lives here.
Gigantic whale people.
Ooh.
Yay.
Nice.
And I think they're migratory, but okay. this is they come here every year, and there's like a huge like party or exchange of ideas, some sort of festival.
Are they like philosophers? I love the idea that they like migrate around and they exchange ideas.
I love that.
Yeah.
Amazing music.
Oh, especially with like the spirituality themes of this game. That could be
great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Yes.
These huge, and as famous ancient philosophers did, each of these large creatures have their own literal schools that follow them around.
Yes. Oh, dog. Oh, no. That's so good.
Excellent. So,
my advice for this, what was that?
It's the pod, though. I don't know.
There's a whole philosophical debate within the whale community about that.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Oh, and then Darcy, I would like for you to tell me about a non-sentient creature. This could be domesticated or otherwise that lives here.
There's all sorts of weird technology, that biotech going on, right?
Yeah.
What about, and so there are things like living weapons, so it seems like there's remnants of old weird tech lurking around. So I'm almost wondering if, like, functionally the equivalent of, like, you know, in a fantasy world, it would be, like, skeletons, like, kind of reanimated beings wandering around, but instead of skeletons, of course, it would be, like, kind of like you know, maybe the like plates of, I've been on this echinoderm kick for some reason, but so like a whole bunch of basically like bones of, you know, the chitinous plates that were once part of actual living creatures have been sort of like engineered together, and they've got like a semi, you know, lifelike film that kind of holds it all together. But they sort of, they undulate and they move around, and I don't know why we keep them around. Maybe it's just, they're either charming or they're really hard to destroy because they've just stuck around so long.
What about, like an ooze or, like some really low level species or whatever that adapts really quickly. So it's the, like, it's the skeletal cockroaches effect, you know, where it's like you can kill some of them, but they just adapt really quickly. They don't form higher level stuff eventually, you know, because people keep killing them because they're a pest, you know, at least in the civilized areas. Right.
Yeah.
But they're just, you just cannot get rid of them entirely. And you have all these little, like, they pick up all the little detritus and just form these.
I like the ooze bit. Right?
Just sort of like hang out. Okay.
Nice.
So
I don't know what to call them.
Oh,
yeah,
that is
a good question.
Sorry.
Ooh.
We found our sea squirrel.
How about sea squirrel?
Oh my gosh, cute. The charming pests. Awesome.
I love that. Okay, and let's just let's say they usually have like one pseudopod that like hangs out the back for whatever reason.
Yes.
So they have a little like oozy tail.
I love
it. It's got to be an oxygen appendage, right? It's a little oxygen appendage. Oh, so it's surface area and takes it all in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Appendage, that's good.
That's awesome. Okay.
So good.
So we've answered three questions, and we already have a unique, vibrant world to which we can play in. There is a threat to this unique, vibrant world, and I mentioned it before. It is the corruption and the pollution that threatens the ocean. So we don't have it defined yet. Nor do I know that we really need a concrete definition of what this is or what this looks like. I think that might come up during play. However, I do have some questions prepared to talk a little bit about the corruption. So one of you three, I would like someone to volunteer to tell me the last time that you experienced corruption. Your character's not your player. Not like you as human beings playing. I don't need to hear about how you bribed someone.
I'm from Chicago, man. It was today.
So this corruption does take a physical manifestation in the world. If you would like to define what that looks like and have that be the last time that you experienced it, that's totally fine.
So what about, like, I know there's like the whole algae bloom thing where it'll take over like a certain area, it blooms, and then it deprives all the oxygen and then everything dies. So what about something like that? And it's like a purple color.
Okay.
Cause why not? And then it leaves this purple cloud that sort of just settles on the bottom. And so you'll find this like streaks of purple along the seabed in certain areas. And it's like, you know, we have wildfires out here, and you'll be driving down the freeway and you'll see just like a section of hill or something. You'll be like, it's all just black. And then, you know, and everything around it is fine, but you can tell it's like, oh, you know, something happened there.
So that is a really great description of this. I don't want to speak for you, but Darcy, do you think that this is something that might have affected Asteroid's homeland?
Oh, I like that a lot. Yes, that's great. Let's tie that in. So that got hit so hard that, it was sort of, you know... It's just become dead sand there at this point. It's only microbes. Its name suffocated everything out, except the extremophiles.
Yeah, I love the phrase "dead sand."
Dead sands, I like it.
All right. So, how does this? How does the corruption change a natural process? So before it wipes it out, it changes something about an ecosystem. This may be a telegraph that it's about to be here. It may be an effect of the corruption itself that might manifest once something is corrupted. What does it do to natural life?
I wonder, I mean, we haven't dealt so much with the sort of base level of psionics going on in the world yet.
Yeah.
So that's one thing is like the team that we're on is very, very strongly psychically linked. But one of the conceits of the setting is that there is a low level of that in pretty much everything. So mm-hmm. I don't know if we want to bring that in somehow.
Yeah, I would really like that to be threatened because that makes it so personal to us too, our own ability to combat the corruption, if that's mm-hmm. if the corruption affects that, that's kind of a double bind for us.
I wonder, do we want to say that it does something where it sort of deadens that connection beforehand, or something like
does it turn us against each other with it, or could how could it?
I don't know if we want to get that extreme mm-hmm. when we're talking about it, but we can. I definitely like the idea of deading something or like muting it. This is more for flavor than it is for any sort of like mechanical effect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it literally deadens the whale people's music.
Oh,
and they can't figure out why. Maybe this is like they haven't figured it. We know as players know why, or maybe they've already figured it out. But there's something about. Maybe their music is also tied with psionics and whatever, like, psionic frequency they work their music on.
Oh, okay.
That's, like, how
so, like,
it's manifesting.
It, like, blocks communication almost. So it's not like it's more like jamming. What about that? Like, it's a signal jamming type effect where when the bloom happens or when it's coming, you can, like, everybody gets that little bit of, like, just that, like before it rains, you feel the humidity in the air, you know that it's going to be like hot and miserable and everybody just gets a little bit irritated. You know, something is coming. And then, you know, with rain, it breaks and it's usually better. But in this case, it breaks and then kills everything. Yeesh. That's scary.
Yeah. And my final question is, how has this begun to manifest in your city?
Ooh, yikes. What if the whales didn't show up?
Oh, no!
Yes!
Like, they're late.
Really cool.
They're late.
I love it! They're late!
And everyone's freaking out.
Yeah.
How do you lose giant whale people? I love it.
Yeah.
Ooh, that is very good.
And the other thing, too, is I know Rich mentioned, what was it, the SOFAR channel, where it's the, like, acoustic channel where sound can, you know, go for thousands of miles or whatever. What if, like, you can hear them? And they're just, like, repeating something crazy. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay.
That's
so
wild.
Yes. I like that. Ooh.
Okay. All we've gotten is their distress signal.
Yeah.
A perplexing one.
Ooh.
Yeah,
so that is all the questions that I have so far. Let's take just like a 5-minute break. We'll come back and we'll sit down and we'll play a little bit of Descent into Midnight.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you're interested in Descent into Midnight. If so, you can sign up to receive email updates about the production, check out some of the awesome concept art we have, and learn a little bit more about how the game plays, all at descendintomidnight.com. You can also follow the game on Twitter at DIMRPG. Keep an eye out for 2 more episodes on this feed, continuing play with this group. And please, please, especially for these episodes, we want as many eyes as we can have on this production. So, as always, remember to share and enjoy.